Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack complex ideas, help you get informed fast. Today, we're diving into something that, well, it might genuinely surprise you, especially if you've ever thought of economics as, you know, dry, maybe a bit nerdy, or just about money. We're exploring this core tension, how economic principles, often dismissed, sometimes even attacked, are actually really vital to understanding, and maybe even solving some of the big social and cultural problems that people are most concerned about. Our deep dive today comes from a really interesting discussion found in the YouTube video transcript. It's called Austrian Economics in the Age of Megaco Tom Woods. And it digs into some potent critiques of economics from, let's say, a specific viewpoint.
Right. And our mission today really is to shine a light on how what looks like a dismissal of economics. Well, it actually overlooks this powerful toolkit that economics offers. And this isn't just abstract theory, right? This toolkit can genuinely illuminate ways to address some really deep-seated issues, things like family stability, community health. And I mean, look at the soaring cost of housing. That affects so many people right now. We're going to try and connect quite a few dots today that might seem pretty unexpected at first glance.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack this then. The source material brings up a fascinating contrast, historically speaking. Think back to the Ron Paul movement. That was, I mean, it was heavily focused on economics, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Deeply.
People were actually buying these huge, like 900-page economics books.
Yeah.
Human Action, for instance. Because Ron Paul urged them to. The demand was apparently so high, one institute mentioned clearing out old editions just because they couldn't keep new ones in stock.
That's serious engagement with theory.
Yeah. Exactly. A real appetite for economic ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But then you fast forward to, well, the current political landscape, particularly certain movements that have emerged more recently. And even though there are huge economic issues on the table, tariffs, trade, all that, there seems to be less emphasis on, you know, deep economic theory. In fact, the source highlights this kind of curious disparagement of economics sometimes, people calling it a sham science or superficial or just caring about whether the line go up on some chart.
Right, the line go up critique.
Yeah. It's often painted as something for pointexers, you know, overly intellectual types. And there's this call instead for men of action.
And what's really fascinating there is the specific critique coming from folks identified as traditionalists.
Yeah.
Their view, as presented, is that the free market itself is like an outgrowth of the wicked enlightenment. That's strong language.
Wicked enlightenment. Wow.
Yeah. And the idea is that it reduces people to just mere atoms, you know, stripped of their social identities, only caring about material stuff. They argue pretty profoundly that these so-called economic laws are just phantoms, things you can and maybe should ignore if you want a certain social outcome. The core message seems to be, look, there's more to life than just a higher GDP.
Which, on its face, sounds reasonable, right? Who would disagree?
Sure. But then they advocate for these men of action. And here's the critical point the source makes. If these men of action don't actually understand economic principles, well, then just doing something can often make things much worse than doing nothing. We apparently saw examples of this during some of the economic interventions around COVID. The unintended consequences could be pretty severe.
Okay, so this brings up a really important question then. Are economists really obsessed with just one number, like GDP? Are they actually blind to these broader societal values, like the critics suggest? You know, the stereotype of the cold, calculating economist.
Yeah, that's a really key point to clarify, because honestly, the idea that economists, especially certain schools of thought, are obsessed with GDP is, well, it's just not accurate. Economists, particularly in the Austrian tradition that the source focuses on, have been pointing out the major flaws in GDP for a long, long time.
Like what sort of flaws?
Well, for one, it includes government spending. But that spending is financed coercively through taxes. Mm. So we can't really know if people actually value those goods and services because they didn't choose to buy them voluntarily.
Ah, okay. The value isn't tested in the market.
Exactly. And maybe even more importantly, GDP only counts final goods. You know, the stuff consumers buy at the end. It completely ignores this massive chunk of economic activity.
Right.
All the intermediate goods.
What falls under that?
Things like raw materials, manufacturing, all the complex supply chains that make the final goods possible. And get this, these intermediate expenditures amount to almost twice what consumers actually spend.
Twice.
Yeah. So ignoring that gives this totally false impression that consumption is what drives the economy, which is like a fundamental misunderstanding. You can't just consume your way to prosperity, right?
Yeah.
Real growth has to start with production, with investment,
yeah.
Saving.
Okay, so GDP is flawed. But what about that other perception, that economics is just about cold, hard efficiency, getting the most output for the least input, maybe regardless of other costs?
Yeah, that's another common one. But again, especially within the Austrian school, that's not the focus. Murray Rothbard, who's a major figure here, explicitly ruled out efficiency as the main criterion for policy.
Really? What did he put first then?
Ethical principles. Things like justice and, crucially, property rights. Those have to be the guide. This is actually a pretty big contrast with some other approaches you might see. Think about that classic example economists sometimes use, a train throwing sparks that burn a farmer's crops.
Okay.
Some economic perspectives might say, well, a judge should decide based on who can maximize overall wealth, even if it means the farmer loses out. Sort of a cost-benefit analysis.
Right. The greater good argument, maybe?
Kind of. But Austrian economists would typically lean much harder on strict liability. The farmer's property was damaged, their rights were violated. That's the primary concern, not some abstract calculation of total wealth. So this idea that all economists just want efficiency above all else, or ignore rights, it's really a mischaracterization.
Okay, and what about the other big critique?
Yeah.
That economists see people as just, you know, isolated atoms. Interchangeable cogs only connected by money. You hear that a lot, that economics strips away the human element, the community aspect.
That's another really profound misunderstanding, honestly. Austrian economics specifically is very much concerned with the real actions of real men. It absolutely acknowledges how complex people are. We're motivated by what they call psychic income, which isn't just money. It includes everything that contributes to our well-being.
Like what?
Job satisfaction, family ties, community involvement, spiritual life, all of it. It's not just dollars and cents. Rothbard himself was really clear on this. He said, individuals are necessarily born into families, cultures, communities with specific values, religions, traditions. He explicitly rejected the idea that people are bound to each other only by the nexus of market exchange.
So the opposite of the atomistic view.
Pretty much. And even Ludwig von Mises, you know, a foundational figure, he understood concerns about things like mass migration. He acknowledged fears people might have about becoming a minority in their own country, facing national persecution, especially when the state has enormous power. He recognized, quote, the terrifying thought of living in a state whose government is in the hands of members of a foreign nationality. So these thinkers were deeply aware of the social fabric of non-monetary values, of group identity. They weren't blind to it at all.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. Because a lot of those traditionalist concerns we mentioned, they revolve around family well-being, fighting drug abuse, promoting social harmony, keeping communities together. These feel like deeply human issues, right? Things that seem miles away from economic charts for most people. How does economics, this supposedly detached field, speak directly to these kinds of concerns?
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, economics actually has an incredibly powerful toolkit to help improve every single one of those areas. And the main lever here, the primary way it helps, is by minimizing unemployment. Especially that really damaging long-term kind of unemployment.
Okay, how does unemployment connect so directly?
Well, the research is just crystal clear on this. Unemployment sets off this cascade of social problems. Studies consistently show it leads to lower physical health, lower mental well-being. Get this, a 63% increase in mortality risk for those experiencing unemployment.
63%, that's staggering.
It is. And for older workers who lose their jobs, the risk of heart attack and stroke doubles. And that higher mortality risk can stick around for 20 years.
Yeah.
And it hits community life, too. When people are unemployed, they're less likely to be involved in church groups, community organizations, even just informal social gatherings. It erodes social capital.
And substance abuse.
Big connection there, too. Long-term unemployment makes individuals 1.3 to 2 times more likely to develop substance abuse disorders. There's data showing a 15-20% higher incidence of opioid misuse linked to job loss.
And families.
Huge impact. Studies show significantly more friction with spouses, with children. Layoffs can increase the chance of divorce by up to 20% in the U.S. And you see similar numbers in places like Sweden and Australia. Mm. We absolutely saw a major spike in all these problems during the economic chaos related to COVID. It was a real-world tragic demonstration of these links.
Okay, so if unemployment is such a massive driver of these social ills, then what's the economic answer? How do we minimize these devastating recessions and depressions?
This is where understanding monetary economics becomes absolutely key. F.A. Hayek, he won a Nobel Prize for this work. He showed pretty convincingly that these big system-wide downturns usually have a monetary cause.
A monetary cause,
mm-hmm.
Meaning the money supply.
Yeah.
Interest rates.
Exactly. The focus really needs to be on the central bank. For the US, that's the Federal Reserve, the Fed. The Austrian theory of the business cycle basically explains it like this. When the central bank artificially pushes interest rates down, usually by expanding credit, creating money, it fuels an unsustainable boom.
Unsustainable how?
Because the low rates encourage malinvestments. Businesses start projects that seem profitable at those artificially low rates, but wouldn't actually be viable if rates reflected real savings in the economy. Eventually, reality catches up. Those misdirected investments have to be liquidated, and that's the bust, the recession.
So the boom itself sows the seeds of the bust.
Precisely. So, to avoid these wrenching boom and bust cycles that just amplify all those social problems we talked about, you need to let market interest rates work freely. They need to reflect genuine savings and investment preferences, not be manipulated by a central authority. It's really a fundamental misunderstanding to think people like, say, the Fed chair Jerome Powell are just being stingy when they raise rates, or to think that prosperity can just be created by pushing some magic button of
That
intervention.
sounds like a critique often leveled at the political left, that sort of interventionist impulse.
It often is, yeah. But the source suggests some on the right mistakenly adopt that same mindset, whereas true conservatives, maybe in the vein of Richard Weaver, tend to be realists. They recognize there's a sort of natural order of things, including in economics, that you can't just arbitrarily override with government action or central planning without consequences.
And inflation. That is tied into this too, right? The effects go way beyond just noticing higher prices at the checkout.
Oh, absolutely. Inflation has really profound corrosive effects on society. First off, it massively discourages saving. I mean, think about it. Even the Fed's target of 2% inflation per year, that means your savings lose about 30% of their purchasing power over 20 years.
30% just vanishes.
Gone. Poof. And this subtly forces ordinary working people, people who maybe don't have investment savvy, into taking risks they don't understand. They feel like they have to get into the stock market or whatever just to try and keep their head above water to preserve their
That
wealths.
creates anxiety, I
A
imagine.
ton of anxiety. And it diverts mental energy. People spend more time worrying about money, less time on maybe more fulfilling things. It can push people towards higher paying careers they don't actually like, just for the money. It fosters materialism. And ultimately, all this erodes family and community ties. Financial stress becomes dominant. Community loyalty might weaken. Societal values can shift.
And just to be clear, what's the primary cause of that general broad inflation?
According to this economic perspective, it's primarily the central bank's actions increasing the money supply. It's not primarily caused by, say, high oil prices or government spending itself. Those things might redistribute wealth, change relative prices, but unless the government spending is financed by the Fed creating new money, those factors alone don't cause sustained, across-the-board price increases if the money supply stays constant.
Okay, let's pivot to something super tangible, something incredibly frustrating for, well, a lot of younger people and families right now. Housing costs. Home prices are just out of reach for so many. This is a huge barrier to starting families, putting down roots, things those traditionalist thinkers are often very concerned about. What does economics offer here? Is there a path to affordability?
Yeah, it's an issue that just feels overwhelming, doesn't it? But economists actually have some remarkably clear insights here. It is, as the source notes, kind of ironic that many critics of the free market weren't exactly overjoyed back in 2008 when housing prices actually fell sharply, and then actively supported policies to make them expensive again. But setting that aside, if the concern about affordability is genuine, economic analysis points towards a solution that might sound surprising, but it's powerful: deregulation.
Deregulation of housing.
Yes. Brian Kaplan, an economist, makes this case compellingly in his graphic novel, believe it or not, called Build, Baby, Build. He argues that full deregulation of housing could slash home prices by, get this, 50%, even adjusted for inflation.
50%.
Half.
That sounds almost unbelievable.
It's a huge number, but the argument is that it would address the core issue driving up costs. And think about the side benefit. Achieving that would also create a ton of good jobs in construction and manufacturing, things critics often say we need more of.
Okay, 50%. How could just deregulation achieve that? What's being deregulated? It sounds too easy.
Well, it sounds simple because the core problem, according to this analysis, is relatively simple. It's artificial scarcity created by regulation. The biggest cost component in new housing often isn't the lumber or the labor. It's getting permission to build in the first place.
Bureaucracy and red tape.
Exactly. navigating these incredibly complex zoning laws, laws that often mandate only single-family homes can be built in vast areas. They limit or forbid multifamily housing, like apartments or townhouses. They restrict high-density developments, like taller buildings. They impose minimum lot sizes, forcing people to buy more land than they need. They mandate excessive parking spaces for apartments or businesses, even if public transport is good or fewer people drive.
So all these rules just limit the supply of new homes?
Drastically limit it. And on top of that, you've got huge amounts of land, especially out west, owned by federal and state governments. This just kept off the market entirely, further reducing supply. Now, the interesting thing is there's actually broad agreement among intellectuals across the political spectrum, really, that these kinds of land use regulations are counterproductive, even anti-human. There's consensus they should be removed, but very little actually gets done about it.
So the knowledge is there, but not the political will.
Seems to be the case. It's a classic example of where intellectual agreement doesn't translate into action. And the result is that it directly stops people, especially young families, from affording homes and building stable communities.
Wow. So it really seems like dismissing economics, seeing it as this trivial, abstract thing about numbers, isn't just wrong. It actually gets in the way of achieving the very social goals many people care about most. Family, community, stability. It seems almost counterproductive.
Precisely. Yeah, if we tie this all together, understanding how the world works through sound economic principles is, well, it's indispensable. You can't ignore it. It gives us the tools to actually mitigate some of these really deep-seated social problems that worry us all, whether it's the damage from unemployment, the health impacts, the relationship stress, or the erosion of family ties from financial pressure, or the housing crisis blocking young people. Good economics, especially the kind of insights highlighted from the Austrian school in our source, can help us avoid these well-intentioned interventions that seem good, but end up creating false prosperity, only to set the stage for even deeper problems down the road. They can intensify the very issues they claim they want to fix. So ultimately, these despised and maybe rejected economists, they're far from detached from reality. They're not focused on trivial things. They actually have incredibly important, indispensable things to say about the real troubles that ail us. Their insights into human action, incentives, unintended consequences, they're profoundly practical for building better lives and stronger communities.
It leaves you with a thought, doesn't it? Perhaps the most profound solutions to some of our deepest social challenges. Maybe they don't lie in grand talk-down plans or dismissing complex fields like economics. Maybe they lie in actually understanding and recognizing the subtle, often unseen workings of human action and incentives right here in our own lives and communities. Something to think about